Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest-running podcast, now in our 16th year. This week feature an interview with Jennifer Shatley, the president of the Nevada Council on Problem Gambling and a UNLV associate, on the need for sports betting and online community to understand how marketing can impact responsible gaming. This week's program is supported by Konami Gaming, whose All Aboard slot has ranked top 25 for indexing new games premium leased for six straight months in the Eilers Fantini Central Game Performance Database. Jennifer Shatley is one of the leading experts on problem gambling in the U.S. She spent almost 20 years with the Harrah's and Caesars organizations, leading that company's responsible gaming programs. As a member of the UNLV responsible gaming effort, Shatley recently co-authored a white paper on sports betting and online gaming marketing and the dangers of encouraging problem gambling. The widespread and rapid growth of online gaming and sports betting puts pressure on companies to gain market share and use any methods available to acquire customers. Shatley spoke with me from her home office in Vegas in May. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest today is Jennifer Shatley. Jennifer, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Roger. Thanks for inviting me.
So, I know you from quite a ways ago when you worked for Caesars for so many years, running their responsible gaming program, and you're one of the top voices in the responsible gaming industry. So it's nice to get together with you and to talk about this important subject. So you were the lead researcher on this study that came out through the International Gaming Institute at UNLV called The Marketing Moment, Sports Wagering and Advertising in the United States. Give us a little bit of the genesis of that study and why it came about.
Sure. I think because of the rapid expansion of sports wagering across the U.S., I think these types of conversations should be happening. We should be thinking about this as we're legalizing, and it gives us a good opportunity to really think about how to implement it and how to promote it in a responsible way. And I think this report is unique for two reasons. I think one, just the broad perspective of the authors. So you have academic researchers that were part of this, mm-hmm. You have former industry members, you have a former regulator. So we looked at it from a lot of different angles, and I think you need that sort of broad perspective.
Sure.
And then the other is most academic reports, in my opinion, mm-hmm. are written for other academics.
Right.
They're not accessible. They're, yeah. I think we wanted to do something that was a bit more approachable,
right.
For a wider audience, because there needs to be a lot more voices within this besides just academics.
Yeah, there's no question. It's not a dry academic report, I can tell you that. I enjoyed reading it, and it reflected a lot of the concerns I've had recently. So let's start. Your background obviously is responsible gaming, so you came at it at the angle, that some of this advertising and promotion of sports betting could really impact people who are vulnerable to problem gambling.
I did. I also looked at it from an opportunity perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we're having all these conversations right now about sports wagering, how do you even place a bet? How do you use the site? Why aren't we now engaging in prevention messages and responsible
sure,
betting
right.
messages at the same time? So I think that's an opportunity to that I saw within this.
Sure. At the same time, there are tremendous amounts of partnerships being struck between these sports books, professional teams, professional leagues, colleges even, and of course the media. I think the media plays a large role in this. They're kind of falling down right now. So are you concerned that the vulnerable people will succumb to these messages without us thinking about it?
I think that we have ways to advertise gambling. We've seen that. I mean, we've had gambling in general in the U.S. for a very long time. I think there's a way that you can do it in a responsible manner where mm-hmm. you're not targeting vulnerable populations
right.
or youth. And I think those same approaches can be applied here. So I don't think that it's sort of this black hole there.
Sure.
I think there's a lot, and that's what we tried to do. We tried to look at what are the existing approaches, where are areas that perhaps we can improve. And I agree with you that normally when we talk about these issues, we talk about what should the industry do? What can the industry do? We need to be talking much more broadly
mm-hmm.
of what should governments do?
Right.
What should the teams and the leagues do?
Sure.
They were so separated from gambling for so long. Now they're in the middle of it. So
sure.
they need to really engage more with responsible gaming if they're now engaging with gambling, and how they even talk about it. Universities, do they have, most universities don't even have a policy about gambling.
Right.
They need policies. They also need training for their athletes. You know, that's a vulnerable population.
Sure.
So, and then the media, you mentioned the media, and I think that that's a big one as well, is how are they talking about gambling, sports wagering in general, and what sites are they promoting? That was something we really talked about in the report, was, you know, there's a lot of illegal sites that exist. And right now in the U.S., as we're trying to legalize this, you know, people are confused of, is it even legal in my jurisdiction?
Right.
If it is, who are the licensed operators? And if you have media out there promoting illegal sites, somebody could think that, well, I read about it on this newspaper, you know, whatever, so it must be a legal site. I'm going to engage with that site. So I think there are a lot of stakeholders that need to be involved.
Yeah. And I'm on a lot of social media platforms, and you know, Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, you know, those kind of sites. And there's a lot of promotion of illegal sites going on. And I try to point out that these sites are illegal. And these people come back to me and say, oh, we're not illegal, we're legal. You know, and they insist that no, if you gamble on our site, you're not going to be arrested. You know, but of course you won't be arrested, but you may lose your money. And who knows what these sites do with the money that they make. You know, I mean, there's been a lot of evidence that they're money laundering or even trafficking in sex trafficking. You know, it's a crazy thing, but people don't really understand this.
Right. And that's the thing is, you know, not only do these sites not contribute to the economy from a local jobs or tax perspective, but there's no regulatory protection for consumers. So if there's a dispute, too bad. You know, you're not going to have any assistance against that site. Right. And then there's no responsible gaming protocols at all.
Yeah, no question.
Those are dangerous sites.
And some of them promote themselves saying, we don't do KYC. Well, you know, is that a plus, you know? I guess it is, you know. So do you think, you know, there should be some sort of educational process for each of these players in this market?
I do. I think there needs to be a broad spectrum of education. You know, how do you engage with this? How do you talk about it? How do you promote it? And then, you know, and I think there needs to be research around it, too. How does this actually affect people? We don't know right now.
Sure.
So I think there's a lot of components that we need, but definitely a broad education that's for all the audiences needs to be brought into that.
So you know, as a researcher, do you see any difference between sports betting and some of the other avenues of gambling? You know, sports betting, you know, unless you're playing it live, is a pretty slow moving gambling enterprise. You know, but of course, if you're playing it live, it's a different story. But is that different than you know, the instant keno or the you know, online casino games or things like that?
I think actually a distinction that I would make is, there seems to be an idea that you have some type of level of control in sports betting, that if you do your homework, that there's no risk.
Right.
And I think that's something that we really need to talk about, because there's some types of advertising that kind of promote that idea.
Sure, right.
That you can be an expert, but you know, gambling is about risk. It's about luck. It's not all about this skill. And I think that's where that differs from most other types of gambling.
So I think one of the positive things that happened recently was that the Vegas Golden Knights of the NHL signed a deal with a tout service out of Mexico, you know, and immediately people came down on it and said, it's not a good idea, you know, and they canceled it the next day, thank goodness. But I mean, that's certainly one step too far, don't you think?
I do. Yeah. There needs to be a lot more research into how to do things like this, especially, you know, when you look at the UK, I think that's a market that we can really learn from. You know, they're much more mature. Obviously, there's other things going on there. There's all this political things and, you know, the media, the way they portray gaming in general and the public sentiment is very different than here. But I do think there's lessons to be learned. You know, all of that kind of converged in the UK because of the sheer magnitude of advertising that was being done, especially around live sporting events.
Sure.
So I think that's something that we really need to think about in the US. You know, it's the stadiums are named for, in some cases, after wagering companies. It's all over the boards. It's all over the banners. It's on the scoreboard. It's every ad, you know, it's on, you know, and is it going to be on the jerseys? That's the question. Yeah. And so I think we really need to kind of step back and think about how much is appropriate, especially around live sport, when you know there's going to be a large youth audience.
Right. So the first time I went to the UK, not the first time, but the first time I went to a soccer game in the UK, I was kind of shocked that there was a sports book in the stadium, you know, but this was 10 or 12 years ago. And of course, now it's going to be a regular thing, you know, in every stadium in the US probably. So, you know, how do you think that should be handled? I mean, they're all building these lounges and things of that nature.
Well, you know, I think as long as you're age gating and you're making sure that youth can engage with that, then I don't see an issue with that. It's the same as having a bar. Every stadium has at least 12 bars that I've ever been in. So I think it's very similar to that.
So my problem with all this increased advertising and partnerships and that, you know, kind of goes back to the when the DFS companies were became aggressive here in the U.S. And I didn't want to say become legal because that was kind of led them into this problem. I mean, it was like every sporting event you watch, every commercial break, you know, had a DFS commercial on it. And I think that really turned people off, and it made people think, well, is that legal in this state or not? And you know, that got them into a little problem. And that seems to be the way we're going with sports betting advertising at this point, which of course includes a couple of those DFS companies that were guilty in those days. So do you think we need to take a step back and kind of look at the amount of advertising we're doing?
I do. I absolutely do. I think, you know, and some of the operators, especially those that were involved in the DFS, I always get that confused, the Daily Fantasy Sports controversy, have come out and said that, you know, they've learned from that experience and they're going to be much more strategic and thoughtful in where how they advertise. And so I do think that that is necessary, or we're going to see that same kind of backlash that we did when DFS happened.
Sure, no question about that.
If you have a few moments today, search All About Slot on YouTube and you will see literally hundreds of fan videos for Konami's All Aboard game from players around the world. It has achieved a huge player following at an incredible pace. If you haven't considered All Aboard for your casino, land-based or online, take a minute. It's a strong title that will be tough to miss out on. It's just the beginning of what Konami has planned for its Dimension 49J cabinet. Visit KonamiGaming.com/premiums for more information. Now back to our podcast.
You know, let's go back to this legal versus illegal sites. You know, I see news stories that quote Bovada as the source for the odds that they're giving, and you know, Bovada is totally illegal in the U.S. You know, I was just reading something about MyBookie the other day, and some guy, you know, got burned by them, and again, that's another one that's quoted by the mainstream media. I mean, they don't seem to understand the difference between legal and illegal.
Right, and that's unfortunate, and that's why there really is a gap in the education. If they're talking about this, they need to be doing it in a responsible way, and part of that is not promoting illegal sites.
Sure.
You know, there are programs out there where journalists can search and find out if these sites are legal or not,
right.
And I would encourage them to take that extra step.
Right. And how about these social media platforms? And you can be you know, banned for political speak, but you can't be banned for promoting an illegal gambling website. I mean, do they bear some responsibility to decide whether, you know, to actually find out whether something's illegal or legal?
You know, I would say yes. Mm-hmm. I'm not the policymaker for
sure,
this
right.
type of issue. But I would say yes. I mean, it is imperative that you're not promoting illegal things. They wouldn't want other illegal things being promoted on their sites. So why shouldn't that extend to gambling?
Right.
But I also think that, you know, we shouldn't be targeting sites that are for youth.
Right.
You know, that are very mm-hmm. popular with youth,
sure,
like
right.
TikTok
yes.
and Snapchat and Instagram mm-hmm. and all of those things, unless we can have some sort of age gating of messaging.
Right.
And I think that's something that social media sites need to think about, is how do you put that into your site, of giving the ability to people to send messages that can be age gated.
Sure.
Otherwise, we shouldn't be sending, you know, calls to action or links to gambling on these sites if they are primarily used by youth.
Sure. Well, another thing, you mentioned the UK before. You know, they're considering banning any kind of gambling advertising, you know, during the day up until 8 o'clock at night. Do you think that's something that could come back to this country and be instituted here?
You know, I know people have talked about that for years, and in some markets, whenever gambling was legalized, casino gambling, that those were in play. They actually did have bans on advertising. I don't think they're effective, personally. Mm-hmm. I think there's much better ways to address this issue than just sort of hide it. Just because you're not advertising, it doesn't mean you've solved anything. I do think that governments should put in public health frameworks around this issue. So prevention, education campaigns, definitely treatment, research. So all of these other things are much more effective than simply saying, well, we're just not going to let you advertise.
Sure. You know, sports betting is really the first way you can legally bet on mobile devices in the U.S., except for New Jersey, which had that early on. But does that even make it more dangerous to problem gamblers, or don't we know yet? Is that something that we need to research before we can make a determination on that?
I think we do need some more research. Mm-hmm. You know, I think you could sort of tie that to internet gaming. And we thought there was going to be this huge upsurge. I don't think we've seen that. Right. But I do think that's something we need to continue to monitor. The always available accessibility of it.
Yeah, no question. So you know, do we even have an idea of what triggers problem gambling in problem bettors, you know, when it comes to sports betting? Is there something, again, you said, well, you know, people get the perception that if you think you know enough, you know, you're going to win for sure. You know, obviously that's not true.
Right. Yeah. And I do think it's that perception of control, that you somehow can control the outcome, and that lowers the risk. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a danger.
Right. And so many of us men think we know sports inside and out, right? I don't know why I can't win, but it doesn't work for me. In fact, my Kentucky Derby bet this week is Hot Rod Charlie, named after my grandsons.
Yeah. I usually just pick them by the names
exactly,
as well.
Right, right.
I have no other.
Right. So there's also been a lack of technology to kind of battle problem gambling, even you know, on the, you know, the non-mobile side. There seems to be a rise of technology, and I know this organization, Conscious Gaming, that was founded by the founders of GeoComply. They're trying to kind of bring this to the forefront and get everybody to cooperate. Do you think there needs to be more of that cooperation amongst all the stakeholders in this business?
I think so. I really do. I think there needs to be a lot of different people coming together to try to address this issue. You know, specifically with what Conscious Gaming is doing is trying to get a sort of a nationwide exclusion list.
Right.
I think that, you know, as long as you can figure out how to do that in a way that the processes and the policies make sense for, you know, how the operators do it and how they engage with each other, then I don't see a downside to that.
Yeah. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about the responsible gaming programs of all the individual companies. You, who really built the Caesars program, which is still one of the best in the industry. You know, I know MGM has been working on it for a while. They work with the GameSense program out of Canada, and recently Hard Rock came out with their own version. And my concern there is that, and then when I talk to these people that are running it, they say, well, you know, we have a different culture, and you know, we have to do things a different way. And shouldn't everybody kind of be getting on the same page when it comes to finding solutions to problem gambling?
I would say so. I think there should be much more cooperation in that area as well. We should be deciding best practices. We should be investigating and researching of what works well and implementing that as a group. Mm-hmm. You know, we at Caesars, you know, we were very progressive in this because we implemented our program back in 2003, seems forever ago.
Yeah.
and that was to actually proactively engage guests around responsible gaming, which normally, you know, it was the stagnant messaging. And I think we need more of that innovative approach. And so, you know, once an operator kind of establishes that, I do think it's imperative that other operators kind of rise to that level.
Yeah. Would you like to see like a minimum set of standards, you know, applied for every company? And then if they want to go beyond that, you know, that's fine. But do you think there should be a basic minimum that they should be doing?
I do. And I think that's established in the regulations.
Right.
I've always been of the idea that, you know, regulations are that basic bare minimum. That's what you have to be doing. And you can't look at responsible gaming as simply a compliance measure.
Right.
As long as I'm doing that, I don't need to do anything else.
Right.
And you should absolutely be doing more.
Sure.
It's imperative for those of us in research to say, well, what more should you be doing? What's actually effective?
Sure. Well, you know, I know you were part of the setting up of the responsible gaming standards for the American Gaming Association. Has that been, you know, welcomed by the whole industry at this point?
I think the AGA members that have developed it, I do. I think that, you know, nobody wants to do this in an irresponsible manner.
Sure, right.
They want to know how to do it responsibly. And I think when they can all get together and engage and really kind of operationalize that into a code,
right,
then I think that's effective. And it's very, I think that's very welcome in the industry.
Right. Great. Great. So as I said, I found this report really interesting, very accessible. And I think everybody in the business should read it. So how can people get a copy of it?
It's at the International Gaming Institute website.
Okay.
If you just go to that site, you can find a link to it there.
Okay, great, great. Well, congratulations on writing this program, Jennifer. It's really, really eye-opening for me, and I think everybody in the industry should really see it, and especially outside the industry. You know, there's so many organizations now that are in gambling, and they don't really know it yet. So I think it would open their eyes to read it. So thanks for taking the time to join us.
Great. Thank you so much for having me.
Why can't we give love now our chance? Why can't we give love, give love, give love? Hope you enjoyed this week's podcast. Special thanks to Konami Gaming. Reach out to your Konami rep if you are headed to the Vegas area next month for the NIGA trade show to schedule a private showing with Konami. To learn more about responsible gaming and how it is impacting the casino industry, visit ggbmagazine.com. To get all the news of the gaming industry, particularly of the recovery from the pandemic, including daily updates, subscribe for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss a single episode of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB Podcast. Pressure.